From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last Friday morning when Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren answered the longtime question of what would be built on Parcel 5 in downtown Rochester. By now, you've probably heard the Rochester Broadway Theater League will build a new 3,000-seat performing arts center that will also include housing, restaurants, and retail. We've talked about the project several times on this program, and it will help kick off our conversation today with several candidates for Rochester City Council. Today's discussion is the second of four throughout this month with the 12 candidates. Can't fit them all in at once, so we're breaking them down into groups of three to talk about why they've decided to run, what their visions are for Rochester's future, and how they would seek to improve our city. It's your chance to meet the candidates, so I invite you to call or email the program. Joining me today is Malik Evans, school board member and past president. He's also the business and consumer manager at ESL. Thanks for joining us, Malik.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Judah is a teacher at Edison Career and Technical High School. He's also a realtor and an activist in the Charlotte neighborhood. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Megan.
And Ronald Hall is a small business owner and consultant. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Megan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And I'd like to invite listeners, if you'd like to call in and ask the candidates your questions, our number here is 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm also on Twitter at mmacmedia, or you can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. In a moment, we'll get a chance to hear from the candidates about why they decided to run for city council. But let's get back to that news on Parcel 5. I'd like to listen to some comments from RBTL Chairman Arnie Rothschild. He says he believes this decision is a done deal and nothing can derail a performing arts center on Parcel 5. So a few days ago, I think it was Tuesday, Evan asked if there's a chance that the Performing Arts Center will end up needing ongoing taxpayer subsidies in the same way that Frontier Field and the Fast Ferry did. So here are Arnie's comments and that conversation.
Give me the percentage chance that whether it's 1 year in, 5 years in, 10 years in, there's any taxpayer need to subsidize.
None.
Zero.
There's two parts of our funding plan. The first part is we're going to raise the delta between where we are now and construction costs. And I'll come back to that because we may go to the state for a small portion of that, depending on what the numbers look like. But the other thing is we're going to create a $10 million endowment. And the endowment ensures that there is not going to be a problem, even with the generations of replacement of carpeting that you go through with the wear and tear items. So, no, we have a legitimate plan here.
So that's Arnie Rothschild. I'll turn to our panel now. Do you accept that explanation that there's a 0% chance that the city will have to step in and offer taxpayer support once the Performing Arts Center is built? I'll start with you, Matt.
I hope that he's right with that information. I think we've seen a number of projects here in Rochester where that's kind of been billed in the beginning of the process, and we haven't seen that come to fruition. There's been a need for city support in maintaining the facilities.
So you're optimistic.
But I would be hopeful, but skeptical at the same time.
Ronald?
I'm going to look at this optimistically because you have a lot of people that are backing this project, you know, including Mr. Thomas Calasano, who's contributing a large amount of money, and his name's on the building. So I think he's going to steer clear of that, and he's going to want it done the right way, hopefully. But at the end of the day, just like Matt said, I mean, a lot of these resolutions don't come to fruition, and there's always other costs that they're not anticipating. I don't know if they've done a true land study of the Parcel 5 or not. But those are just some of the costs. But hopefully, yes. I'll take him at his word for right now.
Mm-hmm. Malik?
I hope so. The city can't afford to subsidize anything else. The city's already cash strapped, as are most municipalities in Monroe County, including the county itself. So we can't be in the business of offering subsidies, really, to anybody at this point. We need to find ways to generate more revenue. So hopefully that this project will do that. And again, I think that this is the early stages of the project. The devil will be in the details, and I'm sure that there will be more information from a financial perspective that City Council will study intently in the weeks and months ahead. But again, I hope that he is correct and that it will not need a public subsidy to operate.
Would this Performing Arts Center have been your first choice for Parcel 5?
Would it have been my first choice? I really didn't have any particular choice. What I wanted, which my choice would have been something that's going to be an economic engine that's going to generate jobs and generate revenue for the city. And I hope that this does that. It'd be very interesting to see what the overall economic impact will be overall in terms of residual effects that will happen in terms of bringing people downtown, shops and other things that may pop up around it. I think that that's important. I think that one of the biggest mistakes we make in Rochester and continue to make is that we think that large projects are going to be our savior. This should be seen as one of many other things that we should do in order to generate economic activity, not just downtown, but also in our neighborhood. So I didn't have a first or second or third choice. I just wanted something to be there because we're not generating any revenue by nothing being there.
Mm-hmm. Ronald, did you have a first choice for Parcel 5?
I saw a couple of the proposals. I have actually talked to Mr. Galena, and I like the structure of that proposal. I saw what the business or what the art center proposal had to come with, but as far as having a first or second choice, those are the only two I really saw. But I was more in favor of having a Greenland to where it's a park and you can attract people down there. That was, if I were to say I would have a preference, that would be it. Mm-hmm. But like you said, like Malik said, it's all about what we're going to do with it once it's actually here, because we do have a history of these huge projects, these huge undertakings, and what's happening with the modernization project. You see other things that are happening behind the scenes, and it's like, okay, we want to make sure everything's on the table so the people, this could truly benefit the people.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what would your first choice have been?
I don't think I necessarily had a first choice either. I agree with both the other gentlemen that it needs to be something that brings in some tax revenue. We obviously have a challenge with our budget every year, and that's something that's important to any development. And also the same sort of thing along the lines of large-scale projects are not going to save us. We need to look at more incremental developmental aspects of things, long-term plans, not just at the city center, but around the city. I think that the other thing is I was hoping the city would learn its lesson from Charlotte and the development project up there and the challenges that were faced with the community.
You're talking about the Fast Ferry.
Not the Fast Ferry, but the actual port development and some of the projects that were proposed last year that the community really fought against. I think the challenge, we're seeing it again with this selection of the RBTL project. I personally would favor some green space down there as well. I think it's an important place for meeting of the community. So I kind of hoped that they had learned some lessons from the challenges in Charlotte, and I don't know that that necessarily has happened.
Mm-hmm. Some of the criticism surrounding this project is that it may not be accessible to everyone, especially from an economic standpoint. Ticket prices, housing. On the program, Arnie Rothschild did say that there would be more of a scale with ticket prices because the venue will be larger, there will be more flexibility to offer tickets at lower prices. But thinking about the housing, there will be high-end housing. He also mentioned there will be an affordable housing component. He wasn't able to define what that was. We may talk to Bob Morgan, the developer, about that. But do you think that it's important to have mixed or affordable housing at that site? I'll start with you, Ronald.
Yes. And also, too, we have to look at this business model that he's proposing as well. I don't know if that is sustainable down there for the long term. But at the end of the day, that's something that City Council is going to have to take a hard look at. And that's why it's important to have people on City Council that's forward-thinking visionaries for this area. Unfortunately, we've been stuck in a rut here, excuse me, trying to move forward. But as we take a step forward, we're taking two steps back, and we're back to the back to ground zero. How long has this project, how long has Parcel 5 been empty for?
Right.
So hopefully, like I said, in business, just like I was talking to Malik, in business, you want to take people's words for it, but until you actually see it on paper, see how it all comes together fully, that's when you're going to be able to truly look and appreciate, everything that this plan is about. And I'm looking forward to reading the full proposal.
Mm-hmm. Malik?
No, absolutely. I mean, and not just there. We need mixed rate and affordable housing all over the city. I mean, for example, from the education perspective, when schools hit a tipping point of over 40% poverty, it's almost like no way going back. And so it's the same thing in the city of Rochester. It's the same thing in the county of Monroe. We need to make sure that we have market rate and affordable housing everywhere, not just downtown, but all over the city, because that gives all families choice, and it also provides equal access. That's something that, to me, is not a privilege but a right, and everyone should have the right to be able to go to those places. I know I heard you mention that the ticket prices might be an issue. That could be an issue, but I think that it's – but that point, I think, points to the larger challenges that we have in this community in terms of our poverty level and other things. And obviously, we want everyone to have access to arts and entertainment because it does – arts and entertainment are important. Those are things that really enhance folks' overall well-being. I know what me for me as a kid, what arts and entertainment did. So it is important to ensure that there is that access for everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, Megan, I really believe that mixed-use housing is critical to downtown development. In the past year, there have been 1,200 units developed down there. You know, the prices range from $1,400 to $2,900 a month. The median home price in the city of Rochester is $53,000. If you look at that as a mortgage, that's somewhere between $385 and $450 a month. Who's paying $1,400 to $2,900 a month? You're pushing our residents out of downtown. We're, in essence, pushing poverty out of Center City. Who is going to be working in these stores and businesses that we're creating in these new developments? They won't be able to live in these houses or these developments, these rentals. So I definitely think that we need to consider mixed-use housing or mixed-price housing when we're looking at these projects, and especially if these developers are looking for subsidies in any form. I think that's a critical component, is making sure that low-income and market-rate housing is included to ensure that all of our residents have access to living in these areas. You know, we want a vibrant center city with lots to do, with people living down there. We need to have it reflective of the whole diversity of our city.
On April 7th, when we had three of the other candidates in studio, a listener called in and asked for the candidate's thoughts about what she called corporate welfare, so tax breaks for developers. So I'd like to bring that question back. I'll ask each of you, we'll start with you, Matt, what do you think about tax breaks for developers?
You know, there's two parts to that problem. I think initially the tax breaks were put in place to entice people to build downtown. I'm wondering personally if we've reached a tipping point where we don't necessarily need some of those things to happen to draw people into city center. The other side of that is we hear, you know, developers saying that they need these in order to carry out the projects. While again, I refer you to the $1,400 to $2,900 a month rent. Is that really necessary? I haven't seen the numbers. I would love to see the numbers, and I'm sure that City Council does its due diligence, and I would, you know, as a member of City Council, do the same thing to make sure that those are allowed. The other part of it is we're looking at 10-year tax abatements. The average homeowner lives in their house for 5 years. So my question is that 10-year program really a viable option, or should we be looking at different time frames? We need to be more creative about how we're offering these abatements and programs and making sure that we're getting a return on what we're putting in. So are they creating the number of jobs that they're expected to create? Because if you're coming back and asking for another tax abatement, I want to see that you've performed as you had agreed to in the first time.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting and complicated question, and I don't think I can quantify an answer within a few seconds. So I'll summarize it by saying this. They're good if they're used for the right principles and the reasons why they're supposed to be used. But many times we see that they're not. They're just using it, selling it, the next developer's getting them, and they're just transferring down. To me, that's criminal. But at the end of the day, you know, City Council, you know, the City Council and the mayor, they're the ones that have to take a look at that and push back on these guys for doing that. I mean, like, just like we talked earlier, many of these guys are supposed to be hiring people from the city as a result of that. That's not happening, you know, at least on a large scale. So, I mean, I can see the good in it. I don't agree with it, though, the way it's being implemented now.
Mm-hmm. I think the issue is, are they doing what they say they are going to do? If you are getting any type of tax break or subsidy and you say that you are going to do X, you need to be held accountable for doing that. And if not, there needs to be a clawback. And you make sure that you recoup the funds that you got as a result of you saying that you were going to create this number of jobs or whatever it is. That has to be tightly monitored and controlled. The other thing is a thing of parity and fairness. Again, if you're going to build a new American city, if you're going to build a city where you're going to have a bounty for all, you just can't look at large. You have to focus on small. It is small businesses that are the engine of America. The vast majority of businesses in America are small businesses, and small businesses become large businesses. So if you're looking at giving breaks to large businesses, you also have to look at programs and subsidies that you have for some of these smaller neighborhood businesses that might be on Jefferson Avenue or might be on Park Avenue or might be in other city neighborhoods. So you have to have parity in that, and from that standpoint. Otherwise, what you have is a system where the little guy, the mom and pop shop that might have five or fewer employees, feels as though they're at a disadvantage at the expense of the little guy. So we have to, as a city, get to the point where we're thinking about both, not just all large, but small, medium, and large. And that's how you really lift other economies. And that's what other cities that are successful and are in positions where Rochester want to be, that's what they've been able to do.
Mm-hmm. You're hearing from Malik Evans, Ronald Hall, and Matt Judah, three candidates for Rochester City Council. This is our second in a series of four conversations with all 12 candidates. You can hear our first, which was on April 7th. That's on our webpage, wxxinews.org/connections. And during that episode, we talked to Sean Dunwoody, Mary Lupien, and Willie Joe Lightfoot. That is, again, available online. Today, you are feel free, please, to give us a call at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 to ask the candidates your questions. If you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I think this is a good chance to hear from each of our guests about why they're running for city council and what their first priorities would be if they were elected. We'll start with you, Ronald.
When we were sitting down critiquing the mayor's plans, in particular Chief Shepherd, we were going through it and saying, you know, we're just looking at it, and we thought, you know, we're doing a lot of critiquing, but we're not really doing anything to be a part of the process. So at that point, I decided, let's go ahead and I want to go ahead and do this. So that's when I decided, okay, let's go ahead and set the paperwork up. Let's get in contact with the Democratic Party to announce our candidacy, and that's what we did.
Have you run for office before?
Yes.
What did you run for?
School board.
Okay. What skills do you think from that experience would you bring into this particular race?
Well, one, I'm not tied to a singular ideology. My campaign is about the people and working with the people in order to change the community and change our environment. I didn't go through the traditional, you got to talk to this person, that person, and let them know you're running. I just went ahead and said, you know what, my focus is going to be on the people. Some say, as a business model, that's a flawed strategy because the majority of the people in Rochester don't vote. But at the same time, they're not engaged in the process either. And we've gotten a lot of tremendous support. I'm also self-funding my campaign, too. I haven't asked for a dime or accepted a dime from anybody, okay? That might change in the future because there's a lot of people in here that's getting a lot of money. So I might have to, you know, call up some of my college friends and say, hey, listen, I need some help. But that's the gist of our campaign, is to make sure we, you know, be the voice of reason to the for the people and talk power, you know, speak truth to power.
Mm-hmm. And you're a small business owner?
Correct.
Can you share some of your experience with that?
Well, I mean, I have 20 years of management experience up to and including senior executive. I've had to manage budgets of, you know, over $1 billion. I know how it is to hire people, have to terminate people, how to build something from the ground up, how to work with a diverse group of people. And those skills alone, along with being able to analyze business reports and analyze trends and working well with people, is going to serve well for this community. And we're able to listen, you know, do an active job listening as well as coming up with real-time solutions in order to solve some of the issues, pressing issues of our city, including our $50 million budget deficit, lack of jobs, housing issues, poverty, which is a big buzzword now, you know, mental health, accessibility, health care, stuff like that.
When you're out in the community listening to taxpayers, what are some of the things that you're hearing that they're focused on?
Oh, jobs. I mean, it's downright criminal to have, you know, 65, 70-year-old, you know, woman, you know, raising her grandchild, you know, 14, 15 years old, having to work two part-time jobs, not able to pay, you know, the rent or the mortgage, you know, and have to follow up with schooling and stuff like that. You know, you go into some of the houses that people are living in, they're renting from, their rent is $1,200, $1,500 a month, and some of the repairs that are needed in these houses are dire. I mean, it's hurtful. I grew up in the projects, okay? So there were times when we didn't have certain things, but that was so long ago. And to see that now and see how it manifests, it's just troubling. It really is. There were times when, you know, you're in school, you know, and these teachers know your background and where you come from, and they tell you, you're not going to amount to nothing. You're not going to be successful. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. And then you keep that in the back of your mind. And then it's like, why do I even bother going to school? Then people have their own different outlets, whether it's drugs, alcohol, stealing, jail, because they lose their lack for hope. They lose their lack to live. And that's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm not accepting, you know, I'm taking donations, but I'm not outwardly campaigning for money, because I want to make sure that I keep that essence of the people there. I get approached by people all the time. When I've been in, you know, when I've worked in, you know, worked in corporate America, and I've had, you know, a high management position, I would have 10, 15 people coming to me, you know, asking, you know, about, you know, situations with jobs and stuff. And I didn't realize the situation is as dire as it is. And I really believe that I can bridge the gap, bring people together to focus on a long-term goal. But the things that stand in the way are politics, the process of politics. Let's say Malik wants to support me. He might not be able to because it's a political issue. And I'm not saying he does. I'm just using that as an example. And I apologize for doing that. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. But politics gets intertwined into everything that we do. And it's unfortunate because we lost the focus of the people that we're supposed to be here trying to help. I never want to lose that focus. And that's the reason why I keep going on. There was a legislative district meeting the other day, the 25th. They told me that they were going to reach out to me, let me know when it is. They never did. And I get it. The information is here. But at the same time, we have to become a party that's inclusive of everybody so we can focus on these issues that's pressing the people in our community, the most vulnerable people, and move forward. And that's the gist of my campaign. And I'm sorry about that, Megan.
No, don't apologize. Well, I'd like to talk about the current state of the local Democratic Party a little later in the hour. But before we do, Malik Evans. First
yes.
time running for city council.
Yes.
Why have you decided to run?
Well, you know, first off, I love the city, and I think that's why all of the other 575 candidates that are running are also there are a lot of city council candidates, but I think there's 12. But that shows the passion of folks. But I Rochester has given so much to me, and you have an obligation to try to give back. This is just another way to give back through service, and it's been. The center of my life for as long as I can remember, serving folks. But my focus on for running for city council is around three broad issues: jobs, neighborhoods, and youth. All being important, but youth being one of the ones that I think are absolutely critical. Both from having served on the Board of Education and being involved with youth issues since I was a youth, is something that is extremely important to me. As we talk about poverty regularly in the city of Rochester, you really have to focus on where it starts. And a lot of times where it starts is with our young people very early on making tough decisions. So, you know, some quick data points in terms of in Rochester, you know, Rochester was still twice as worse than New York State, for example, in teenage pregnancy. This has major, major effects in terms of poverty and in terms of what Matt would see in his classroom on a regular basis. So these are larger, broader issues that we have to make sure that we look at as we look at trying to address the systemic issues that we face. So my hope is that jobs is another one. That's something that we hear all of us hear the importance of jobs. One of the ways you get folks out of poverty is to make sure that they have access to high quality jobs. So that's something that's critical and important. And our previous conversation about that we just had about the about downtown development relates to that. And that's jobs, but we have to look at it from a comprehensive standpoint, and not just large companies that are going to come and be our savior. That's not going to happen. And then lastly, as I mentioned, neighborhoods. That's where it starts. That is our lifeblood. That is our arteries. When you first talk to a person, you ask them where they live, and then you draw parallels from there. You start talking about what's going on in your neighborhood, what's happening in your neighborhood. Neighborhoods are absolutely critical to the success of our city, and neighborhoods actually can be very empowering for us at City Hall, because it is the neighbors that really make the entire city. So if you want to empower a city and make a city strong, you have to empower people that live within those neighborhoods that are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, doing their best to improve the city. So those are three key areas that are extremely important to me in our race for city council.
Matt Judah, teacher in the Rochester City School District, first time running for office?
Yep, first time.
What's your number one priority, and why did you decide to run?
So there's really two main reasons I decided to run for office this year. The first one is, you know, I've dedicated my life to improving the lives of residents and youth in the city of Rochester. I've worked for the city school district for 13 years. I worked for Parks and Recreation for 10. So I've had day-to-day experience working with families and youth and seeing and hearing from them what they really need, what they really want from the city. And I truly believe that that gives me a unique perspective and an opportunity to advocate for my students and their families and the residents of Rochester. The second reason I'm running, Rochester is ranked 15th in the nation for the LGBT population. We've had openly gay representation on city council since 1985, when Tim Maines was elected the first openly gay official in New York State. I truly believe that's an important aspect of our city. I truly believe that that's a voice we need to continue to have on city council, especially considering the national trends that we're seeing in terms of anti-gay legislation, in terms of the murders of transgendered citizens across the country. So those are the two main reasons that I've chosen to run for city council this year.
What would your number one priority be?
Number one priority, I definitely would have to say that that has to do with looking at our fiscal solvency, looking at how we can work to balance our budget. As Ronald said, there's a $50 million deficit, and that's a challenging thing to handle. What we have to do is we have to really ensure that we can recruit and retain residents. As a realtor, oftentimes I see, you know, young couples buy houses when their child turns 5 and they start to look for kindergarten. They decide to move out of the city. We really need to work on improving retention of residents, and that requires us to ensure that we're maintaining the high quality services we have, whether that's the maintenance programs in terms of refuse and lighting and water. And we also need to look at the areas that we can improve. We need to ensure that we have a recreation program that can compete with our suburban counterparts. And we need to look at our schools, and we need to really make some hard improvements so that families want to stay in the city and feel comfortable sending their kids to the schools that I teach in on a day-to-day basis.
Listeners, if you have questions for any of our city council candidates in the studio today, give us a call at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm late for our only break of the hour, so we'll do that quickly. And when we come back, we'll talk about party unity in the Democratic Party here in Rochester. We'll talk about schools, race, and community relations, and answer your questions. So we'll be right back with Malik Evans, Matt Judah, and Ronald Hall.
Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with historical reenactors, reenactors who portray some of the most prominent names in history, like Susan B. Anthony and Harriet Tubman. Also, important historical figures who might have been lost in most history textbooks. Characters like the Reverend Jermaine Wesley Logan, that if you don't know, you probably should. We'll talk about their craft and how they bring history to life next hour.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking to 3 of the 12 candidates for Rochester City Council. Matt Judah, Ronald Hall, and Malik Evans are joining me in studio. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we'll open up the phones for your questions, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, if you have questions for your candidates. And I'd like to kick off the second part of the hour with some questions about party unity. Last week, when we welcomed 3 other candidates for council, there was some debate about how to heal the local Democratic Party. Do you agree that the party is split? And if you do, what do you think can be done about it? We'll start with you, Matt.
Thanks, Megan. You know, as I've been going and talking to residents, the one thing I'm hearing over and over again is, you know, we need to do better. Whose side are you on? Are you on a side? Because I don't want somebody who's on a side. That's what I'm hearing from residents. I think they're tired of seeing and hearing this division. So, yes, I do think it exists. I think that we need to put aside our differences, and we need to recognize that the primary goal we have is improvement of our city and representing our residents. It's not about any one individual. It's about doing what's right for the city.
Ronald and Malik, do you think there are factions in the local Democratic Party?
There's definitely a split. I mean, the party is definitely is not as united as it can be, and it hasn't been for years. I mean, this is not anything new. I've been involved a long, long time. I mean, I've been, and before I was an elected official, I was involved in campaigns. So there's always been splits within the Democratic Party. The challenge is that we have in this community is our community is extremely divided economically, racially, and unfortunately, it looks like the Democratic Party also is divided among racial lines. That's a challenge, and that's very distressing to me, and I think to many people who are involved within the party. That's a problem that needs to be addressed. How you solve it? I mean, I don't have a magic ball. I'm not sure how you solve it. I am concerned about the issues with the Democratic Party, but selfishly, I'm more concerned about what's going on with Ms. Smith on Smith Street or what's happening in our schools or in our neighborhoods. That's a much greater concern to me than what's going on with the Democratic Party, because that is what people elect you to do to solve problems in my capacity on the Board of Education. That's what I have to be focused on. But we absolutely have to see what we can do to improve the Democratic Party, particularly from someone like me. I like to win. And if the Democratic Party wants to win in areas other than the city, we have to figure out what's happening there so we can start winning more elections countywide and doing better. How you solve that, though, is it's you solve everything through dialogue. It's the first step. And the first step is admitting that we have a problem, getting all the folks in the room, and then figuring a path forward from there.
Mm-hmm. I worked on Senator Sanders' campaign, and I saw the fraction in the Democratic Party twofold. What's interesting to me is there's a lot of people that rallied and got behind Secretary of State Clinton to try to push her agenda and her objectives forward. So they do rally around certain issues. I think what the issue with the Democratic Party is, you have the wealthy and the well-influential that are making the decisions for everybody else. Now, you have the people out here that are working, the people that are the working class people that have little to no say, and you have it's being managed top heavy without input from the entire group. When you run an organization like that, you're going to have dissension, you're going to have splits, and you're going to have deceit. You can't have an effective organization like that. Now, as it comes back to politics, you know, some could argue that the election of, you know, the Democratic Party created, you know, President Trump. You know, every poll had Bernie Sanders winning, you know, against Donald Trump, but Hillary Clinton made the argument that she's the best candidate for the job. I don't want to go backwards. I want to move forwards, but I think it's an important lesson in history to where all the major people in the Democratic Party backed Secretary of State Clinton. It might take her to come here in order to bridge the gap to bring people back together. It might take Senator Sanders to come up here to bridge the gap to bring people together. But until that happens, until we have that conversation, until we have the open and honest dialogue, we're going to keep being a mediocre organization that's being run ineffectively. Now, it causes for a change of leadership, but you have the well-connected and the influence that's controlling all that. So what my goal is to stay in my lane, let them do their arguing and fighting and stuff like that, and focus on the needs of the people. That's why I have not gone to any of them and asking for any type of support or campaign donations, and that's why I'm not going to. That's why my focus is going to be on the people in the city of Rochester.
I'm seeing the phone starting to ring. Colin in Rochester, hang there for just one moment. Related to what we were just talking about, some candidates have been more public about their support in the mayoral race, and I know our listeners would like to know if you see that race as exemplifying the split in the party, and if you particularly are publicly supporting one of the candidates. We'll start with you, Matt.
Megan, I definitely think that there is some reflection of the division in the party when it comes to the mayoral race. And in terms of publicly supporting, I am not publicly supporting any of the mayoral candidates. I am focused on the city council race. And as I said earlier, I'm focused on ensuring that we continue to have a diverse city council, inclusive of a member of the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to talk with our city mayor, Mayor Lovely Ann Warren. think she's a great person. I've had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Chief Shepherd. I think he's a great person as well. I've had the opportunity to talk with Miss Barnhart. You know, we went to high school together. So I'm happy to see the competition. And as far as publicly supporting, I have been focused on this race. I have been focusing on making Rochester better. And any of the three that get elected, I'm willing to work with any three of them, you know, under the ideas that we all agree upon so we can make this, make Rochester better.
Mm-hmm. It is, but I think the race does, and you know, you have to be honest, the race does show the split within the Democratic Party, because this could be the first time that you have a sitting mayor possibly not get the designation. That causes concerns. And usually the rule is in politics is I know from being a current elected official that you usually don't go against the incumbent mayor. So you just usually don't do that. That's a problem. So it typifies the issues that we have within this party and why at some point we all need to get in the room and figure out what the heck we're going to do, because we can't keep going through these battles.
Are you publicly supporting a candidate?
I believe that we should not go against an incumbent. I believe that we shouldn't go against an that you can't go against an incumbent mayor, particularly as an elected official. It's very hard to go against an incumbent mayor. Mm-hmm. By doing that, it creates all types of issues. Now, anyone can run a primary, which is what the current mayor did, which is what Bob Duffy did, which is what Bill Johnson did. But when it came to the current mayor running for re-election, they usually got the party support. So we have to really have a conversation about what we're gonna do to be able to go forward from there.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to turn to the phones now. It looks like Colin in Rochester has a question for Malik Evans. Hi, Colin. Colin, are you there? Not
like
hearing
Colin's
Colin.
Not there.
We're having a little trouble with our phones today. Rob Braden. Nope, no Colin. Okay, Colin, try to call back. Sorry about that. We're having a little trouble on the technical side. But I do have some information about one of Colin's questions. He says, why should the public... I think he's trying to ask, Malik Evans, you left the school board early.
Well, no, I'm not there. In fact, I was at a budget meeting two nights ago for about 8 hours. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I was at a budget meeting the other day. I have not left the school board early. I'm there. I was there for a budget meeting, and I'm still on the school board. I'm still an active member of the school board and working. So I don't know his question, but his question might be, you're on the school board. Why should we elect you? Why should we elect you to city council?
That might be
his question. But maybe if he's calling, maybe
yeah. Let's try again. Colin, are you there? Colin?
No, Colin.
No, Colin.
Yep.
Oh,
well,
there
here.
He is. Hi, Colin. Sorry about that. Go ahead. Question for Malik Evans.
Sure. My question, actually, it really pertains to both Malik and Matt, and they both list being involved with the city school district as a qualification. I guess my question is, and they can both take turns answering it if they'd like, why is that a qualification to be elected to the city council, given the city school district struggles? I did ask about Malik's leaving early. I guess that's kind of a not as important, I suppose, but I'm just curious as to why they consider that to be a qualification, despite the district's performance and noted struggles.
Okay, thanks, Colin. Stay on the line.
All right. My colleague here said I can go first. Well, first off, I think it's important to note that the school district has over $1 billion, close to $1 billion budget. I mean, it is absolutely a qualification, but not the only qualification. I think that both Matt and I have great qualifications that go beyond our professional affiliations with the Rochester City School District. Not only that, I'm also a business leader in this community. But I think that we know when you're involved in education, you see every single facet of what goes on in a person's life. And I think one of the things that people need to understand is that what happens in the Rochester City School District is only just a symptom of what's happening in our larger community. So if we're going to talk about addressing the needs of the Rochester City School District, and I've said this on this show for probably the last 12 years, but going back to Bob Smith as host, you have to look at systemic issues that affect the Rochester City School District and the overall city of Rochester. The data is clear. You cannot. It is not fair. It is not equitable to have a district where 90% of the students are in poverty and receive free or reduced lunch. So much to the point of us not even needing to fill out free or reduced school lunch forms. We just approve everyone because the number is that high. That has a major effect on what happens in our classrooms and in our schools. So seeing that and understanding that is something that anyone that is in a position in the city of Rochester has to be able to understand. It emanates from our neighborhoods. It emanates from what our students experience day to day. And it emanates what happens in a classroom. Attendance rates, that's directly related to what we're seeing in our larger neighborhood. So I'm glad Colin asked this question because it's something I'm extremely passionate about. And the last thing I'll say is that we, for years, have nibbled at the edges in terms of how you solve these problems. And if we really are going to solve the issue of education, it's going to take everyone in the community rowing together and finding a solution that where it's just not seen as a school district problem. That's the issue. Everyone sees it as a school district problem. But anyone that's asking a question just about the school district, we have to ask what we are doing as a community, because those problems are only symptomatic of what's happening in our larger community.
Mm-hmm. Colin had that same question for Matt.
And thank you, Colin, for calling in and asking that question. It's a really important one. I echo what Malik said. My qualifications go beyond the fact that I'm a teacher in the Rochester City School District, which obviously gives me a day-to-day interaction with students and families, and an understanding of what's happening in the neighborhoods. I also have been very involved in the Charlotte community in terms of being a vice president of the community association. I've been on the Merchants Association committee. I also helped start a farm market up there. I'm a licensed New York State realtor. So there's many things that I've done beyond teaching. But, you know, when we talk about schools, I think being in the classroom, being involved in the system, gives me a unique perspective. You know, one of the big things that I truly believe, Malik got to that idea, we're nibbling around the edges. We need to take a big bite and solve the problem. And that's going to take a partnership between the city school district with city council and even the county government. What we really need to do is we need to change our focus on how we're dealing with education. We need to go back to neighborhood schools at the elementary level. We need to move towards community schools. We've lost centers of communities in our neighborhood, and the schools need to become those once again. And I wholly support, you know, the work that the school board has done under, you know, Commissioner Hallmark, where they've said we really need to go back to communities or neighborhood schools. And with neighborhood schools, it's not just being within walking distance of your school. That's working in partnership, city school district and the city, to ensure that we include recreation and recreation for adults, for seniors, and for youth, which is going to bring in volunteers to our schools. That's involving our health partners, Rochester Regional Health, you know, the University of Rochester Medical Center, and having them put health centers in locations near to those schools so that we can provide those services to our families. We really need to focus on improving whole neighborhoods and making schools a part of that. And I think having experience in those schools, having worked in various settings across the district, gives me a good understanding to help drive that work.
And also, just quickly on that education point, I would urge everyone to go to the Great Schools for All website to figure out, to learn, and I believe they were on this show, to read about their newer approach to education. I mean, those are the type of conversations that we should be having, and looking at places like Charlotte, Mecklenburg, Wake County, that have made some demonstrable improvement in terms of their approach to education. Until we do that, it won't matter who's on the school board or who's on city council.
Exactly.
20 years from now, we'll be having these same conversations about equity and fairness in the Rochester City School District.
Mm-hmm. Ronald, go ahead.
I've had my time in the Rochester City School District as well, and I wasn't a school board member. I wasn't a teacher, but I was a parent representative at the Rochester Arts and Integrated Technology. From my perspective, looking at that particular building as a whole, the teachers are great teachers. There's great direction there. The issue is leadership, okay? I would say leadership at the superintendent level on down. Now, with that being said, in order to run an effective organization, everybody has to share the same vision. It's difficult to do that when you have X amount of employees there, granted. Now, with that being said, there has to be a singular direction, and the focus has to get back on the students.
Okay, we're down to our last few minutes. I want to try to squeeze in a couple quick phone calls. First up, David in Rochester. Hi, David.
Yes, I would like to, a audit came down from DiNapoli yesterday regarding the finances of the city school district, which didn't make the city school district look too favorable. Now, Malik is running for the city council. What was his role? He certainly had a presence on the city school board. What's up with that? Give us a little light on what's going on here and why you were there and this happened and this came out.
Thank you. Great question. As you know, every school district gets gets audited by the state comptroller's office, and if you look at all of them, I don't think any school district had a perfect audit. That just does not happen. And I believe that this particular audit that the gentleman is referring to is that they looked at payroll over a two-year period, and of the $600 million in payroll over the 2 years, they found a few errors. Obviously, we welcome audits from the state comptroller because they help the taxpayer save money. So we look at the recommendations. Obviously, we disagree with some of them, and we respond. But it's a routine audit that every single school district has gotten. Some school districts have gotten dinged because they had more money in their fund reserve than they should have. But every school district is audited regularly by the state comptroller office, and I have not met one that had a perfect. That has had a perfect audit yet.
Ronald, did you have something to add?
No.
Okay, you seem to be reacting. So,
well,
if you have,
I was thinking about the auditor's reports and stuff, and I've sat in on those, and I sat in on those, and those reports are quite interesting. I would encourage people just to go ahead and read them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Sam, up next on the phone. Sam, we got to keep it real tight. Go ahead.
All right. Malik said that the Democratic Party was divided. But he just named one of the reasons that they are divided, because he was talking about he would not vote against an incumbent. Well, if the incumbent is not doing the job, you don't put the incumbent back in to not do the job. You put them in there to do the job. You put them in there to keep the promise that they made to you. When the mayor came in office, she said there was two cities. Now there's three cities. And then you go down through the neighborhoods and you don't see anything that was done through poverty initiative. If anything, the African-American community and the brown community is worse now than it was when she went in office. So don't tell me anything about you don't vote against an incumbent when they're in office. If they're not doing the job, you move them out of the job and you put somebody in there. It's not up to me as a citizen to suffer just because you don't want to run against and encumber it.
Okay, Sam, I got to jump in just because we're running out of time, and I want to give Malik a chance to respond.
Yeah, absolutely. But what we were talking about was the party, and I will tell you the function of I'm not speaking as a regular voter. I'm speaking as someone in the party official in a party role, and that's a general. I'm just saying. My point, Sam, was that as a general rule, the party usually supports incumbents. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should do that. That's why we have primaries. I've run primaries. I've run in primaries. I've been primaried. So, this is a democratic process. The public has a right to make the decision. People have the right to petition. I've petitioned. I've been in primaries tons of times. So I'm not, I want to be very clear. I'm not making the point to say that we just vote for the same old. In that case, people would think that Donald Trump should stay in the office. But I'm talking about, my comments were to the function of the party and as it relates to party unity. The question was not about candidates. Megan's question was about party unity and what was causing different factionalism in the party. And that was the answer to my question.
Okay. We're down to our last minute and a half here. I'd like to go around the table, 30 seconds each. What would you like community members to know most about your campaign, what your priorities are? 30 seconds each. We'll start with you, Ronald.
Well, my campaign is about the people. I want to bring this government, bring the Democratic Party back to the people, to the working class families. And knowing that I'm going to carry your issues to, speak truth to power. And I think that's very important, because I think now things have gotten a little askew to where people feel like they're lost in the process. I want to get them reengaged. I want to build the base back up. And I want to see our voting rolls get to be, 90-95% like a lot of our suburban counterparts.
Great. Malik Evans.
I would say that I'm accessible, and almost anything I've done in government or in my life has been the result of talking to people and taking their advice.
Great. Matt Judah.
I really want to focus on fiscal accountability, neighborhood development with cooperation of neighborhoods and businesses, and ensuring that we maintain a progressive stance with the LGBTQ community.
And you can find all of these candidates online. We will link to their social media feeds and their websites from our podcast page. I'd like to thank them all for coming in today. Matt Judah, Ronald Hall, and Malik Evans, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Megan.
Hey, thanks for
I'd like to thank my colleague Caitlin White on the phones helping us out today, and Rob Braden's our engineer. More Connections is next. Stay with us for a discussion about historical reenactors. That's next.